Welcome to Angels and Seer Stones. I'm Christine.
And I'm Chris.
Let's say an angel appears by your bedside. How do you know whether it's a divine being or an evil spirit masquerading as in light?
Joseph Smith taught that you could discern the nature of such beings with a simple handshake. Today's episode is about stories in which individuals put this formula to the test. Latter-day Saints are a people of radical faith. We are a unique body of Bible-believing Christians. For us, the scriptural canon has been opened. The traditional sacraments have expanded. Our beliefs and practices are steeped in universalism, esotericism, and apocalypticism.
The Latter-day Saint tradition is a religion in which angels visit everyday people, and sometimes men and women see the divine in stones. In this podcast, we examine the lived religion of Latter-day Saints, our beliefs, and our stories.
We take seriously the whole gamut of Latter-day Saint experience. Join us, Christine and Chris Blythe,
two professional folklorists and Latter-day Saint converts,
as we openly discuss our faith while exploring the traditions of our chosen people. There's a problem with believing, as we do as Latter-day Saints, that the average person can receive revelation. What if these alleged revelations are disruptive to the church or unhealthy to the individual?
In the history of the church, personal revelation could be used as a way to combat church leaders.
Right? Starts in 1830.
Yeah, this is when Oliver Cowdery brought Hiram Page's revelation to Joseph Smith. Page had been getting revelation through a seer stone, just like Joseph Smith had. When Joseph asked God about these revelations, we're first introduced to the concept that only the prophet gets revelation for the church.
And in time, we come to believe that the prophet gets revelation for the church, just as you and I get revelation for the family, just as the Relief Society president gets revelation for the local Relief Society, the Elders Quorum president, and the Sunday School president, all receiving revelation for their individual callings, but never for a broader group of people than what their particular stewardship is.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
Early in church history, Joseph became worried that he too could be deceived while having revelations. In fact, he even had an experience of having an angel attempt to deceive him. We don't know the details, except for one line in the Doctrine and Covenants. It's section 128, verse 20, and it says simply, "The voice of Michael on the banks of the Susquehanna, detecting the devil when he appeared as an angel of light."
When you see a line like this in a historical document, you're left wondering whether it's vague because it's a story everyone knew about and so it didn't need a lot of explanation, or if it's something that Joseph intended to talk about more in depth later on.
In this case, we just don't know, but Latter-day Saints have speculated on the event.
Right. There's even a painting by BYU religious education professor Anthony Sweat that depicts this scene. I'm sure a lot of you have seen it. In an interview with Anthony, he expressed his belief that this was the moment, the origin of Joseph's handshake test. And maybe we should talk a little bit more about what that test is exactly.
On multiple occasions over the last few years of his life, Joseph Smith explained how you could discern between good and evil messengers. He talked about the color of their hair, how only good angels could be accompanied by doves, how angels don't literally have wings, and so on.
Right, and of course, Joseph first taught the handshake test to apostles and then others, largely in private settings. The simple explanation that he repeated on multiple occasions was that if you offer your hand to messengers, it'll be based on their reaction that you'll know whether they're from God or from the devil. And it's more than that. Joseph taught that if the messenger shakes your hand and you feel the handshake, you know they have a body. As such, Joseph taught that they are resurrected or embodied angels. Good guys, if you will. If they refuse to shake your hand but present their message, they are righteous spirits, what Joseph called just men made perfect.
I really like what Joseph says in this case, and this is from section 129. "Ask him to shake hands with you, but he will not move, because it is contrary to the order of heaven for a just man to deceive, but he will still deliver his message."
Yeah, I like that too, and of course, it's in contrast to the last type of messenger Joseph talks about, which he just calls the devil. If the devil tries to trick you into believing he's an angel, you can offer your hand, and he will try to deceive you by shaking your hand, but his hand will be immaterial. You won't feel anything.
There it is. Modern Latter-day Saints have this Doctrine and Covenants 129, where it's referred to as the three grand keys. This was private instruction and wasn't added to the Doctrine and Covenants until 1876, when Orson Pratt was put in charge of a new edition of the scriptures. We should point out that there are several different accounts of Joseph Smith teaching the handshake test. On one occasion in 1840, Joseph taught that the devil might also shrink away rather than offer his hand.
That makes more sense to me. I know I'm not the only Latter-day Saint who assumes the devil is smart enough not to fall into that trap, certainly not more than once. But if we think about the devil as having a compulsion to deceive, well, that's more interesting. And in the contemporary church, more than legend, that's what we have, speculation. We have vernacular interpretations of a theology that, while official, feels quite French. So digging into the historical makes a lot of sense if we want to understand something about the practice that Joseph was sharing with us. Early on, Joseph Smith revealed that the handshake test was connected to the temple. 3 days before Joseph first administered the Nauvoo Temple Endowment in May of 1842, he gave a sermon, which was partly recorded in his journal. In it, he said, quote, "The keys are certain signs and words which false spirits and personages may be detected from true, which cannot be revealed to the elders till the temple is completed. There are signs in heaven, earth, and hell, and the elders must know them all to be endowed with power. The devil knows many signs, but does not know the signs of the Son of Man," close quote. Latter-day Saint commenters have periodically suggested that while D&C 129 might depict this formula as somewhat simplistic, it's potentially more complex.
Here is from one of our favorite Latter-day Saint commentators, Jasmine Rapley from Scripture Plus.
"Secret Mormon handshakes are alluded to in D&C 129, and this revelation is both euphemistic and esoteric, meaning that this revelation is no more about just shaking hands as kicking the bucket is about kicking buckets. And it makes more sense to people who have gone through the temple or have temple knowledge. Part of being endowed with God's power is the ability to discern between true and false messengers."
If you're a Latter-day Saint and you don't know what Jasmine is talking about, go back to the temple and pay attention.
Let's share two more historic quotes from the mid-1800s relating this test to the temple. One of my favorites shows up in a letter that Alpheus Cutler, a schismatic prophet who loved the endowment, wrote to a leader of the newly formed, reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, who had claimed to have seen an angel. Cutler asked, "How do you or how did you know that angel to be an angel of God? Who tried him and how was he tried? In what priesthood did he deliver his message?"
You know, this is similar to another statement from LDS Apostle Orson Pratt in 1845. In a series of articles entitled Angels, Pratt describes various good and evil angelic beings that could appear to mankind. Here's part of the article that we're talking about. It says, "Perhaps some may inquire how the saints can distinguish between angels of authority and such as have no authority, seeing there are many different classes. We answer that no one can distinguish correctly without the keys of the priesthood obtained through the ordinances of the endowment."
That's so interesting. You know, I've actually only met one man who told me that he had conducted the handshake test.
Tell us.
I was visiting Manti, Utah in the early 2000s, where individuals had gotten into praying the true order of prayer outside the temple. I had met a man from some mutual acquaintances, and he had allowed me to stay at his home. It was a fascinating visit. He told me that he had a room with an altar that he would pray at, and on one occasion he had a messenger appear. When he went to shake the messenger's hand, it gave him a strange handshake, and he knew right away it was an evil being. I didn't understand why this being would be embodied, but as this man told me the story, his wife chimed in and told me that the man had been screaming his head off when she ran into the room. I presume she didn't see any evil being, but I don't remember her saying one way or the other. I'm unfamiliar with any stories of the handshake test told for the purpose of reporting that a visionary found that indeed they were speaking to a good angel. But when I asked for stories on social media, Mike Harris from Scripture Insights gave several examples in which a handshake was given before a message was imparted.
And these are really cool. The first example is Joseph F. Smith's famous mission dream that's quoted from time to time in General Conference.
This is while Joseph F. Smith was serving a mission. He says, "While in that condition, I dreamed one night that I was on a journey, and I was impressed that I ought to hurry with all my might for fear I might be too late. I rushed on my way as fast as I possibly could, and I was only conscious of having just a little bundle, a handkerchief with a small bundle wrapped in it. I did not realize what it was when I was hurrying as fast as I could, but finally I came to a wonderful mansion. I thought I knew that was my destination. As I passed towards it as fast as I could, I saw a notice, which read, "Bath." I turned aside quickly and went into the bath and washed myself clean. I opened up this little bundle that I had, and there were some white, clean clothing, a thing I had not seen for a long time, because the people I was with did not think very much of making things exceedingly clean. But my clothing was clean, and I put it on. Then I rushed to what appeared to be a great opening or door. I knocked, and the door opened, and the man who stood there was the prophet Joseph Smith. He looked at me a little reprovingly, and the first words he said, "Joseph, you are late." Yet I took confidence, and I replied, "Yes, but I am clean. I am clean." He clasped my hand and drew me in, then closed the great door. I felt his hand just as tangible as I ever felt the hand of man. I knew him, and when I entered, I saw my father and Brigham Young and Heber C. Kimball and Willard Richards and other good men that I had known standing in a row. I looked as if it were across this valley, and it seemed to be filled with a vast multitude of people. But on the stage were all the people that I had known. My mother was there, and she sat with a child in her lap. And I could name over as many as I remember of their names who sat there, who seemed to be among the chosen, among the exalted.
This is powerful. What a powerful vision. But for our purpose, what's interesting is this line. He says, "He clasped my hand and drew me in, then closed the great door. I felt his hand just as tangible as I ever felt the hand of a man." George Albert Smith, the 8th president of the church, reported a similar experience in which he dreamed of his grandfather. He shook his hand and felt the warmth.
I'm also aware of some schismatic prophets whose visionary stories include some sort of physical contact with an angel. Both Otto Fedding and Alma Dayer LeBaron claimed that an angel slapped their shoulder during their encounters.
Interesting. Where conversations surrounding the handshake test is most prominent is in response to when others tell stories about having seen angels. So when you hear a story that a would-be prophet saw an angel, you ask the question whether he tested them.
I remember the late author Matt Brown telling me about a woman who had gone up in the mountains to pray about whether to join a schismatic church. She reported having met with angels. Matt then said to me that she had forgotten to test the messengers and had been deceived. I thought that was pretty interesting. This would have been about 15 years ago that he told me this.
This is definitely the most common situation in which we hear about the handshake test. But this past week, we received a message from a listener named Burgeon Booman. Burgeon, please forgive me if I pronounce your name wrong. He told us a story that he heard from his district leader on his mission. And this is what he says. It's fantastic. "My district leader shared with his companion and I over the phone on the day that it happened. This occurred while I was on my mission to Mexico. The elders and his companion were walking down the street, talking with people as they went, as it was typical for missionaries to go street contacting as they walked from place to place. The elders walked by a church, not of our faith, and noticed a man sitting on a large gray rock in front of the gate that surrounded the large building. His skin was gray, extremely pale. He had bloodshot eyes, and he was wearing dark clothing. The elders greeted him, saying, 'Hello, good afternoon.' The man quickly replied by saying, 'Hello, elders. When is your ward meeting these days?' Judging by the man's use of the word ward, the elders asked him if he was a member of the church. The man responded, saying, 'No, I've just known a lot of missionaries over the years.' The elders felt a heavy darkness come upon them. As they turned to leave, the man extended his fist to say goodbye, as was customary during the pandemic. He said, 'It was nice to see you, elders.' Both elders fist bumped in return, but couldn't feel a thing. It was as if his hand passed straight through them." If you've been listening to Angels and Seer Stones, you'll know that a mission is the perfect place for a story like this to evolve. I love the variation of the fist bump that developed here during the pandemic.
Of course, as folklorists, one of the questions we're interested in is how this belief is perpetuated on the ground. Many people have told us that they learned of the handshake test in seminary or other church classes. Some reported learning it from friends or in family home evenings.
One of my graduate students even said that when she was introduced to the handshake test, it was in the same family home evening lesson where she learned that you would raise your right hand to the square to cast out evil spirits.
This is all too fun as a convert. I didn't experience anything like that growing up. And yes, just like Chris said, in some ways, these two practices are very similar. They both teach us how to detect or ward off evil spirits, practices I hope I never have to use. One of the best accounts we have found of a Latter-day Saint learning the handshake test comes from a Reddit user. They're an ex-Latter-day Saint who goes by Queen Bee. A decade ago, she wrote that, "This used to give me such anxiety because I could never keep straight which hand you were supposed to feel or not feel. And I was always so worried some ghost would come in my room in the night and I wouldn't know what to do. Oh my gosh, Mormon problems. But seriously, this used to keep me up at night." Okay, this is the portion of the show where we ask for your stories. Help us out. If you have one, share it. Of course, some of the best stories are actually in LDS fiction. Latter-day Saint creatives have imagined the scene many times.
That's right. A few weeks ago, Jack Harrell visited my LDS literature course to answer questions on his wonderful short story, Calling an Election. In that story, the protagonist encounters a seemingly malevolent being, but the LDS reader is set up to know that there's more to this figure when the protagonist is able to shake his hand. It's subtle. There is no explanation of what just occurred, but when I asked Jack about this, he acknowledged he was playing with the concept. The scene I would like to share with our listeners is one from D.J. Butler's incredible book, Cunning Man. This is when Hiram Woolley, the hero of the series, looks into a cursed seer stone. And we're fortunate to have D.J. Butler himself read this scene for us.
He picked up the rock. It was cool to the touch. It didn't feel evil or good or spiritual or powerful at all. The stone felt like a stone. Hiram placed the stone in his hat. He took a minute to listen again to the quiet of the house. Nothing but silence. Hiram lowered his face into the hat. The effect was immediate and overwhelming. The quartz strip in the rock ignited in a blinding light that hurt to look at, and he felt his body move. Vertigo seized him as if he were flying, and a strong wind beat at his face. A Bible passage bubbled up into his mind, chapter 17 of Matthew, the first few verses. "And after 6 days Jesus taketh Peter, James, and John his brother, and bringeth them up into an high mountain apart, and was transfigured before them, and his face did shine as the sun, and his raiment was white as the light." Hiram knew and felt that he stood in front of the dying fire, face buried in his fedora. Yet at the same time, he was standing beside himself, head up, gazing upon both his own body in the shape of a beautiful man, legs, arms, torso, head, and a face that was both indistinct and sharp. Light came from the man's body. Looking right at the figure, he couldn't make out any details. Shifting his gaze, he saw in his peripheral vision features well-proportioned and without blemish. He and the angelic man stood atop a high mountain, clouds and light around and below them. As long as his eyes rested upon the man, Hiram could see him and the rocky landscape, but when he shifted his eyes slightly, all he saw was Ammon's furniture and shadowy walls. Hiram knew a way to test angels. "Spirit," he said, "I understand. Take a grip from me in sign of our covenant." He reached out his right hand, both the physical hand in Ammon's drawing room and his spiritual hand atop the cloud-shrouded mountain. He hoped the spirit wouldn't notice his fingers trembling. The shining man regarded Hiram coolly. "Dost thou not fear to be struck down, as was Uzzah, when he dared to touch the ark of the Lord?" "What have I to fear from my father's servants?" Sweat poured down between Hiram's shoulder blades. "So be it." The blinding white figure reached forward. Diamonds seemed to sparkle on its ethereal skin as it reached out to touch his physical body. Hiram drew his spirit hand back. "Liar." An angel of heaven was a creature without flesh and bone, and knew it, and would never try to shake hands with a human being. Any spirit that would attempt to touch a person bodily was a deceiving spirit, a fallen angel, a demon, or a ghost.
This is great. Butler's merging the idea of the deceptive seer stone, like Hiram Page's, as well as Christ's encounter with the devil and the angelic test, the handshake test. Now, it's clear he doesn't want to get into the physicality of angels in this scene, but I still love the inclusion of the handshake test here. He also captures this idea that shows up regularly in LDS stories, the idea that it's actually pretty scary to meet an angel. Sometimes we should talk about Mary Elizabeth Rollins Leitner's freak out when she was visited by an angelic messenger, Nauvoo.
But we want to see angels, don't we?
You know I do.
The reality is that angelic visits in LDS folklore are rarely messengers who are bringing new instruction, the sort of scene where you need to test the being's intentions. Instead, they appear to strengthen faith or teach you a principle you're already aware of. And often, they're people you know.
That's right. There's no reason to test the angel who just wants you to go get your food storage or do your temple work.
Right. But if you have an angelic visitor, you know what? Go ahead. Extend your hand. And I'll tell you what, Chris and I will try to do the same.
Okay, friends. Remember, share this episode with a friend, subscribe, and rate us. Less than 1% of our listeners have rated the show. The only way to build the audience is for us to help the algorithm along, and that means comments, rating, and shares. We want this show to be an antidote to the avalanche of critical material in LDS folklore. If you look up a lot of the things we discuss online, you're mainly going to find what we traditionally call anti-Mormons discussing it, using it as a reason to talk about how Latter-day Saints and our tradition are ridiculous. And of course, in this show, we hope to present how it's actually a fascinating and incredible and fulfilling culture. Help us out with that goal, and we will see you next time.
See you next time.